A Thanksgiving Day Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on November 25, 1993, entitled, A Flood of Thanksgiving. The scripture reading is 2 Corinthians 9, verses 6 through 15. The text for the sermon is 2 Corinthians 9, verses 11 and 12. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
The Apostle Paul was doing what preachers have had to do ever since, that's he was taking an offering. And taking an offering can either be a drudge and a heavy obligation, or it can be sheer joy. And I have the feeling that today at Christ Community, taking an offering will be an experience of sheer joy. The text, in the context of Paul gathering an offering for the poor folks in Jerusalem, tells us that when we give, we are enriched personally. And what happens is the recipients of our gifts explode in a flood tide of thanksgiving to God. So there's a real connection between giving and thanksgiving. Genuine and authentic giving from the heart elicits from the recipient of the gift a flood of thanksgiving, and God is praised, and everyone is blessed. So giving really can be an experience of sheer joy. There were poor people in Jerusalem and the mother church, as it were. Paul was the apostle of Gentile Christianity. There were those good Jewish Christians back in Jerusalem who didn't really think that Gentiles in Corinth or Philippi or Thessalonica could ever really measure up. And Paul was really anxious to have these Gentile Christians, followers of Jesus, take an offering for those who had the long tradition of Israel's faith behind them, so that it might be a sign of the genuine unity of Jew and Gentile in Jesus Christ, that middle wall of partition had really been torn down, and that in Jesus there was really one new humanity. And so he went about in his churches where he had brought the gospel, and he was taking an offering because those back in Jerusalem were in need. And he was anxious that that be a sign and a symbol. But in so doing, he gave us a lot of practical advice, probably the best discussion of the source and the motivation and the spirit of Christian giving that we have anywhere in the Scripture, which it is not my purpose this morning to look at. But the text itself, bringing that connection of giving and thanksgiving together, reminded me of where we are as a people in terms of our own stewardship effort. We have been engaged in the most successful stewardship effort, I think, in all of my years here, in terms of the number of you who have responded and the number of responses that have indicated a real support of this ministry. And the theme has been unleashed for ministry. And I thought in this particular Thanksgiving Day, when there are not only turkeys in the chancel, but turkeys roasting in the parlor, when there will be people from the community coming here for a Thanksgiving feast, when this chancel will be loaded with good things that you've brought in order to feed those in need, and when you'll bring your offerings for children in medical need in Bosnia, for Gambian children who will be able to be in school simply because some of you are going to supply that need, for our own Jeannie Farr, for whom we've already prayed, who is there, our flesh in Africa, and for someone in Muskegon who will have a roof over their house, over their head, because we've become a part of Habitat for Humanity. I thought it is really the year in which to make the connection between our giving and thanksgiving. And this year, when we speak about being unleashed for ministry, it is with a sense of real joy that I can call you to good stewardship of your resources. It's been a long haul at Christ Community. We started out 23 years ago in that little sanctuary over there. And most all of this we've had to build and to buy property and to build buildings and all of that. It has stretched us. And frankly, I would much rather raise money to meet human need anywhere than I would to have to build an institutional base. If you gave me the choice, I would do the former before the latter, because I could with joy separate you from your money when it was going to meet the concrete need of human beings somewhere. It's much more difficult for me to elicit from you your financial support for building this local institutional base, because I'm so much a part of it, and it sort of feels self-serving sometimes. Not that I apologize for sacred space, for a place. When I was the chairman of a task force that began three congregations in Dallas a good many years ago, we were going to start two congregations that were traditional with property and building, and then we were going to start a third congregation that was going to be experimental, and it wasn't going to have any property, it wasn't going to have any buildings. It was going to happen on the tram lines and in cafeterias and wherever the community met. We were going to have a person on the field without a field, as it were. Well, it was a neat idea. Some church planner's dream, I guess. But we found out within a short time that the two traditional congregations got started and the non-traditional congregation bought property and built a building. We've got three congregations in Dallas, Texas, but they all have property and they all have buildings, because somehow or other, a ministry needs a locus. It needs a place. And so we've got a sacred space, and it's a wonderful space, and I don't apologize for it. I think that it is not a monument that we worship. It is an instrument that we use. But I'm awfully happy in 1993 to be able to say that our stewardship effort has had as a theme Unleashed for Ministry, where we can begin, because some of the pressure of just meeting the needs of our amortization of the facility is to a point where we can begin to build outward and to reach out. I remember 100 years ago when I first came to this congregation right out of the seminary, a young wild-eyed idealist, I laid before the consistory the demand that we have $1 go out for every dollar we had here. There were wiser heads that prevailed at that time, but I think my motivation was good. But then I came back to see that what the future would hold was not so much a local congregation doing something half a world away, but a local congregation recognizing that it must bloom where it's planted, that it must indeed be mission. And out of my first experience here, Harry and Jan Pofal went off to India. And then when Harry came back, when I was back here, Harry used to lay it on me. He said, "Come on, now I went to the mission field because you laid all that on me, and you used to have such a mission emphasis, and now you're pouring it all into Spring Lake." And I'd say, "Harry, give me 10 years. Give me 10 years." And after 10 years, I said, "Harry, I need 10 more." It has taken that long. But I would say that it was the arrival of Peter. Has it been 8 years or 18 now? 8 or 9 years ago, I would say it was Peter's arrival that began to pique our consciousness about the need for a global vision. And eventually there was a task force on global mission. And I think that we have, over these last years, begun to sense that call from beyond ourselves. We are mission. We are in mission. And I am very proud of what's going on here today, and I do commend Peter, the chief turkey of the day, for getting that whole thing going. If it were up to me, I would have held a Thanksgiving theological discussion and then dismissed to our respective homes. Peter will be here with many of you to serve people. And so thank God for a team ministry. And I'm delighted that we are there as a congregation where very tangibly we can feed someone today and we can receive gifts that will reach around the world today. And we can be involved in that broader movement of God's Spirit with a global embrace. And what that does is it releases a flood of thanksgiving. But Paul says, it's good for you. And you know it's good for you. Do we ever feel so good as when we are able to do some good? When we have the sense that we have tangibly touched some life, that we have made life a bit brighter or happier or more bearable or tolerable, that we've brought some joy or delight? Of course we don't. That is life at its best and its highest. To be able to give ourselves away is to find our life. That is the very paradox of the gospel at its heart. So it's good for us. It's good for us. But what it does for those who are the recipients of, well, maybe a child receiving an anesthetic in Bosnia, or someone contemplating the possibility of a home of their own in Muskegon, or a child whose black eyes will shine like gems when he or she hears there's been provision made, you can be in school this year. For us, these are small tokens. But for these people, they are tremendous gifts which cause an eruption of gratitude. You know, when you fix your children's spinach and they don't like it, you say, eat your spinach. They say, no. They say, you ought to be thankful. Many children in the world don't have spinach. Well, your little Johnny or Susie, you're not going to be thankful. There's no thanksgiving on demand. There are a lot of things for which we ought to be thankful. But when we put it in that context, then it's legalistic. Then it's obligatory. Then it's drudgery. Then it's moralistic. Something else when, out of the blue, a gift is given, a gift is received, and there's a flood of thanksgiving and God is praised. Because it's like with love. To love another person is to see the face of God. To love another person is to have the intrusion of that vertical dimension to gift another person. Is to cause an eruption upward. Because we have to do something with our love. We have to do something with our joy. We have to do something with our gratitude. It simply cannot be handled person to person. It always breaks out upward. There is always that other dimension that embraces us so that we know that our human relationship is really the arena in which we experience God. It is in person-to-person, human concrete, tangible relationship that we experience ecstasy, whether in loving or in giving. And ecstasy is from two Greek words, ek, stasis, out of the stasis, out of the static. When we are lifted up out of ourselves, out of that bondage of the ordinary, and suddenly there is the consciousness of another dimension. There is a flood tide of thanksgiving. Giving triggers thanksgiving and brings giver and gifted into the consciousness of the giver of every good and perfect gift. So Paul was a piker, half a dozen churches to visit, offerings to take, and to go to Jerusalem. For Paul, it was rather simple. He could have this symbol of the unity of Jew and Gentile in this offering, gathered from half a dozen places and brought to Jerusalem. For us, my goodness, the whole globe is there. And how will we touch it? What do you think we ought to do about the world? Bosnia? Gambia? Muskegon? We can touch those places, and we will. We are. But it's a fly speck. It's a drop in the bucket. What do you think we ought to do about our world? It is our responsibility. What are we going to do? It takes the resources of the governments of the world. It takes a rethinking of the economic systems of the world. We are a people in an age now where we cannot help but think globally. I'm thankful that from this local community we can touch places in the globe today. But it is a token, and it is a sign of what we must do even more. What do you think we should do with the world? What do you think we should do? Wasn't it interesting, the North American free trade theory, all that politicking that went on back and forth? And behind it all was selfish concern of nations, of organized groups, lobbyists. The question on the world's agenda is never what is right for the world, what is necessary for the world, what is imperative in this threshold of the third millennium. You see, it's always, how can I hold on? How can I get mine? How can I preserve what I have put up together? How can I profit or prosper or at least survive? It is the people who have met Jesus who have to say to the world, wrong question. Wrong question. Idealist. Romantic, hopeless, guilty. But who will say to the world that it has become a global community that must become interdependent, that we must weep with those that weep and laugh with those that laugh and play with those who play in a sense that has never been true before? In the intimacy and the immediacy of world community, what do you think we should do with the world? What we are doing today is a sign, and it is a token. It is a mere fly speck, but it's something. And too often when we are overwhelmed by it all, we get paralyzed and we do nothing. We are at least doing something. But do you think we might be on the threshold of a new age? Do you think that the alignment of the nations, the great ideological divides, economic systems, tried and true understandings, systems of thought, whether they be theological or economic or social, do you think maybe the Spirit of God is blowing things apart in order to create cracks through which light may come? Do you think we may be on the edge of something here where we'll be able to be more than just a rather happy, graceful, somewhat affluent, dignified, clean-smelling community of people? Maybe God is calling us to be unleashed for ministry. Maybe nearly a quarter of a century of building this place is for a century of giving our life away. And if we would, we would never be so rich. And others would be so blessed. And God would be so praised, because when giver and gifted meet, there is an eruption, a flood of thanksgiving to God. That's what we're about. So come and let your very coming this morning, the physical movement of your body, be the commitment to think new thoughts and dream new dreams, and allow the Spirit of God to waft you into uncharted territory. I dare you.